the roll in anyway. But it's, you know, Nashville. This is like, so this is funny because obviously we have to record the way that we do this thing, you know, where we interview somebody and then we record the front and the end of it later.
Right.
Is fascinating in some ways because, like, I forgot who it was. That's not because our guest was super great, actually, but I forgot because it's been so long.
It has been. It's been a week.
We did it a week ago, and then since in that week,
you've gone to L.A.
I went to Los Angeles and back, and made a deal on something, and did a bunch of stuff.
My daughter got engaged.
Your daughter got engaged.
I mean, there's been a lot going on. So, friends, my name is Jay.
Oh, I'm Brian,
and this is the BNA podcast.
So this is where you got to be if you want to know. I tell you
what,
I don't have time,
right,
to Uber drive.
Right. Oh, that's not good.
No. Are you making noise?
My phone is making noise.
It's Jay's phone's
making
noise.
There have been so many conversations that we've had with folks that we kind of go in and we're not expecting much, and then we come out on the back end, and it's like, man, they're really good.
I mean, honestly, including today's episode. There's not anybody that we've talked to that I wouldn't feel like had the city's best interest at heart and was qualified to do the job.
And I
don't ever feel that way. I have an opinion about everything.
Yeah, I've been shocked by the number of natives that are running.
Yeah,
there are at least
kind
four
of a nice
or five.
Touch.
I mean, it's kind of like unbelievable.
And we haven't interviewed Jim Gingrich yet. I hope that does happen. It's a little more complicated than some because Jim is very isolated.
Right.
But I was watching the television this morning and... I think running against the stadium.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure that's a winning play.
Well,
running against the stadium.
We'll have to ask
him
if he ever decides that he wants to talk to us.
Yeah.
So this week,
we
have Alice Rowley. Or Raleigh. I can't remember. She told me.
She told us how to say it, right?
Raleigh.
So however we say it during the interview is correct.
And Alice is a native Nashvillian.
Native Nashvillian.
Well. She is somebody that folks look at and they go, she's to the right of center.
Yep,
and so sometimes folks don't think she has any chance. But she was a great interview.
Great interview.
We had a great conversation with her.
You're going to enjoy this conversation. It is very sharp, good stuff. And I mean, obviously, it's an uphill climb being a conservative avowed Republican running for mayor of Nashville. But she got a good team and a good message, and we'll leave it up to you to decide after you listen to Alice Rowley.
So we are here with another one of the many candidates for mayor. We have Alice Rowley with us today. And Alice, welcome to the BNA podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here.
We're really glad to have you here. And we usually start off by asking, tell us a little bit about your background, how you ended up wanting to be mayor of Nashville.
Sure. Well, to start the first part background, I am a Nashville native. I grew up on Charlotte Pike and went to Hume Fogg High School downtown, which was the same high school my late grandfather graduated from.
I have to make one aside here, which is I think this may go down in history as the mayoral election that involves the most true Nashvillians.
And Hume Fogg graduates.
So we have a few of those as well.
Sorry to interrupt. That's okay. Undergrad, I continued my education out at Stanford University in international relations, and some really well-intentioned public policy thought it would be a good idea to have class sizes in ninth grade English be 20-1. And that was a great idea on paper, but nobody really thought about, did they have enough teachers?
Right.
So me and a lot of other folks at colleges out in California got rounded up and went down to Los Angeles Unified School District and served as teachers on an emergency permit. And I did that until Lamar Alexander decided to run for the United States Senate. And I felt like we didn't have a strong center-right voice that was looking after the rights of parents and the choice in education at the national level. You know, obviously we had Senator Kennedy, but we didn't really have a strong person there. So I came home and I volunteered on his campaign and he won. And then I spent 3 years with him in D.C. where I met my husband, who is a doctor in the United States Army. And the United States Army moves you and the United States Senate does not move. And there was no such thing as telework then.
Right.
So I went and got an MBA at Darden at the University of Virginia. And then I owned and ran a travel company that I grew to about 50 worldwide markets, sold it to a company called World Strides. And then we were, you know, stationed all over, sort of lived on an airplane. And then we got back here as soon as we could. 2011, I went to work for Governor Bill Haslam in economic development. And I like to say pretty much everything that didn't belong in state government was in my portfolio. So I appreciated that. And then worked for a little company on Music Row, where I helped them move from having about 55 employees and no locks on the door to about 140 employees and some locks on the door when I left. So last fall, I was watching our city council and some of the dialogue and some of the animosity, and actually called our current mayor, who I have a great deal of respect for, and I asked him. I said, "Who is on your right who can kind of help articulate some of these issues?" Because it felt to me like everything was going further and further in one direction, and that mm-hmm. we were missing a bridge. And our city, you know, has been really well served by people who are a bridge, right? People like Speaker Beth Harwell for decades as a Republican from here, the Speaker of the House, really advocating for Nashville and for the state. Steve Dickerson, who served in the state Senate for some time. And then we had on the city council, Steve Glover, you know, and it felt to me like where was that person now? And I started to think about it and contacted David Fox, who I have a lot of respect for, and his right. service to the city. And one thing led to another, and I raised my hand to say, I believe I can be that person in this moment where you can see we have a city growing rapidly, and my experience at the executive level helping companies that are growing rapidly grow well, mm-hmm. And then a combination of experience at the state and federal level to try, I think, to remind the state and the city that we can love Nashville and love Tennessee, that we are 1 in 10 Tennesseans, and that we can probably get a lot more done with a little bit more of a collaborative approach.
Sure. So, you know, some of the recent polling has suggested that a majority of folks in Nashville, and certainly a majority of folks that have lived in Nashville, say, longer than 40 years, have not been particularly happy with the direction that the city is going in. Can you speak to kind of your own perspective on what that is and what's behind that sort of sense of unease?
Yeah, well, I would say that you are probably reflecting on that most recent Vanderbilt poll, which is pretty exhaustive, and it's also pretty consistently administered. So we can do things like step back and say, what direction are we going? Because right. we're asking kind of those apples-to-apples questions. And you're right. 8 years ago, the majority of Nashville voters believed we were heading in the right direction. And now, 8 years later, the majority think that we're going in the wrong direction. I think that is that people see the work that has been done in economic development and regionally. I think they can see that the region is really prospering. But on an individual basis, when they look at what is their take-home pay and what are their is their tax situation now, what is the crime situation, what is the homeless situation, they feel like they're paying a lot more to be a part of Nashville and that they're getting less.
Sure.
And I think that's probably driving for most people their sense of like, how are we doing? I feel like I'm paying more, but I'm getting less.
I know one of the things that you've talked about, too, is just the whole property tax increase that was put in a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, of course, the state comptroller was threatening to take over the city.
Mm-hmm.
We were not in particularly good financial shape, and some things had to change. There had to be some movement. Do you think it's that unease is simply about taxes, or are there other factors that are involved here?
No, I think it's broadly around that idea of value, right?
Okay.
Value broadly. So value we can define as what do we see that we're, how are we serving our city? So right now, we have 19 schools in the bottom 5% in the entire state, and 11 of those have been there since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, we hear, okay, our teachers are the best paid in the state, but 40% of the dollars that we're funding our schools at, you know, $1.2 billion are not actually going to issues in the classroom, mm-hmm. right? And so people start to kind of go, hey, I hear this, but I see the trash, the dirt, the streets seem dirtier, mm-hmm. you know, things seem like not as good. So I think it's not just taxes. I think that people really see like what value am I receiving, or what value is the city receiving?
Sure, Brian.
Well, see, my favorite thing to talk about is always core mayor issues.
Oh, good. Those are my favorite things to talk about too.
Traffic. Yeah. Help me with traffic.
Yeah.
Traffic is a disaster in Nashville, but not so much because of volume, but, you know, our city's laid out weird.
Yeah.
Right? It's a very difficult place to drive cars. People, but, you know, people talk about that as much as they talk about anything else that they're upset about.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the police don't do anything about traffic
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They gave up on that one and moved on to other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like there's places where we can work on this. And it's like, we talk about like light timing, we talk about design, we talk about, these are large urban planning issues that seem to have been ignored for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Bound to be something we can do about it. But, you know, you talk about mayors get elected on traffic and trash, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I wish they would add to that a third T, which is toddlers, but we can talk about that later too.
Yeah.
So on the traffic side, and I know this is not the answer that much of the field gives, but I look at it in this concept of pragmatically, what are the first couple of things that we can do, right? Nashville is a very car-centric city. You mentioned you lived in LA. I taught high school there too. We tried in 2018 to believe and bet on that our voters and our citizens would buy into an idea of a very dense downtown transit project. That was soundly rejected, 2-1, right? So then we have to back up and say, what can we do today? Because it's not that the traffic issue is a symptom of the region's growth, right? It's all because we're actually sitting at a pretty steady number of 700,000 citizens in Davidson County. Right? Our net out migration and in has pretty much stabilized. And even the chamber says in the next couple of years they don't actually expect our numbers to grow. So what do we feel? We feel the county, all the counties surrounding us coming in, right, or crossing through Davidson County. We obviously have a huge number of tourists that come too. So a couple of things, the adaptive traffic signaling, which you mentioned, I think we still have places where even from 8 years ago, I think Linda Rebovic did a great job talking about that. I think that there's still places that we haven't invested in that. Are increasing. I think last week or week before at WEGO's budget hearing, they mentioned that we are actually up to pre-pandemic levels in terms of our ridership on our bus routes. And so we're doing something right there in that people are opting to take the buses either for how we have redesigned, if you see places like over in Hillsborough Road or in North Nashville, where we're trying to build neighborhood transit centers where the buses are not having to go downtown to switch in the hub and spoke, but that we're able to create some situations where it maybe makes sense to go from Bordeaux to Hundred Oaks and those sort of transit arteries. And then the third thing I think that we have to look at, because of the regional issue with our traffic and commuting patterns, is how do we start to think through the park and rides, like the one that's out at the end of Bellevue, you know, and some other areas where we then, the pain of driving those last 10 miles into the city is great enough that folks that are commuting regionally will stop and hop on a bus to go from there.
Yeah, I think it's got some potential. I think you're right about the adaptive traffic signals, mm-hmm. because there are five spots in Nashville, Tennessee that are it's desperation level,
mm-hmm.
bad management. It's not, there's not volume.
Yeah.
If it was volume, when you pass, like when you're going out Murfreesboro Road past the airport, as soon as you get past the second light, there are no cars,
mm-hmm.
right? That always tells us, as we learned in LA over time, that means it's the signals.
Yeah.
That means it's the city, not the volume, right? That's the same on Nolensville Road. It's the same on Hillsborough Road, although that's a unique one.
Yeah.
And it's the same on Charlotte.
Yeah.
And all of Charlotte's a little better.
Right. So am I hearing that you are going to volunteer to be on the Citizens Advisory Board traffic signaling?
I would always be on that one. Okay. I actually was, I was on Antonio Villaraigosa's. I was never officially on anything with him. I was just that little guy that pestered him all the time because we were buddies. But honestly, we had Antonio and I had agreed that we could have had the senior project at each high school in Los Angeles County. If we made their senior project, making their traffic signals on the major thoroughfares better with a stopwatch and a yellow pad, we would have done better than where we were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
True in Nashville now. You know?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
maybe we could talk about reinstituting driver's education.
Okay.
Because we don't have it.
No, we definitely don't have that.
No, we don't.
Well, and I do, well, I do know on our driver's test, or it used to be, we didn't ask people to learn how to parallel park. And a friend of mine, I live in an area where we have street parking and you need to know how to parallel park. And a friend of mine, childhood friend, came over a couple years ago, calls me from her car and said, I need your husband to come out and park my car.
This
and
is
a lifetime Nashvillian, like, can't parallel park.
It was a shocking thing. And it's like when I, obviously, those of us who have lived elsewhere, although I've now spent about as much time in Nashville as anywhere in my life. But the when you come to Nashville, you immediately realize that things are very different in the way people drive their automobiles, you know? And it's like, and so I didn't know why until I took my kids to get their license. And it was like, oh, you don't have to do anything to get your driver's license.
Not
you
much.
Not very much.
My son's driver's test in Dixon was 6 minutes long.
It's harder to get an appointment to.
It was way harder to get an appointment
than it is to actually take the test.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned, I think this relates, you mentioned, of course, Nashville kind of at that 700,000 mark. But, but, you know, one of the issues that comes up is affordability, that there's just. We might grow, but there's nowhere for them to live. We don't have enough housing stock. We certainly don't have enough housing stock for folks at the lower income or middle to lower income rate region. I know that's been an issue for a lot of candidates, but how do you address that? How do you begin to think about those kinds of barriers that we're putting on Nashvillians? Because as we talk about expenses going up, you know, certainly the renters in this city have seen an amazing jump in what their rents are. And in the folks that I work with, there just isn't housing for somebody that makes less than 40% of the AMI. And so how do we address that as a city, or do we just not? We just say, hey, we're not going to have any room for those folks. But what I've seen is I've seen a number of folks that are service workers who are forced to move outside the county, which then adds to the traffic problem.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you propose to do that as mayor? I mean, I think that's got to be an issue.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is an issue. And I think what we have to do is turn some of the economic development tools that we've used to successfully recruit or support the recruitment of hotels or all, of companies, and then also some of the pilot and TIFs that we've used to, frankly, to support the building out of really large hotels. And I think we need to turn some of those tools on the question of affordable housing, right?
Okay.
Then we also need to continue, as we have, I think, under this mayor, to fund the Barnes Fund, the Catalyst Fund. And then frankly, I think all sides, from developers to neighborhood groups, and I really started with organizing in my neighborhood in Edge Hill in a period where we were undergoing radical growth. The frustration that people feel around the growth and the planning process, one of the challenges when you have developers who say, hey, I was just getting a regular SP, okay, that means if you believe that it's regular to get a special permit or you know, specially zoning your property, then it's no longer special,
right?
So we know that our zoning code broadly is, we hear this from developers, this slows us down. Instead of us being able to put housing up in 4 or 6 months, it's taking us 13 to 15 months to get through your process as a city. And so I would say, the same way I think most entrepreneurs look at when you have a regulatory shift, and we have a big regulatory shift coming in our city, which we are going to, over the next 4 years, have to figure out, I believe, to move our city council from a 40-person body to a 20-person body, mm-hmm. that also creates an opportunity, right? Because I think we see right now so much of our city council and specifically our district city council's focus is on land use decisions. You watch... When more of the time is spent on deciding what a piece of land can have and first reading, second reading, third reading, mm-hmm. all of this friction, right? And then if we also are stepping back saying, well, our council is going to be half the size, does that give us an opportunity to do what I think most people say? They say that we've tinkered with our zoning and how sort of our zoning code. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the tinkering, that well-intentioned public policy that created an unintended consequence that put me in the classroom in Los Angeles, right. I think we kind of have an opportunity here to kind of go, all right, well, if our city council is going to materially look different and it spends over half of its time on land use decisions, is this not also a time to probably rethink a big aspect of that so that we can bring housing stock online faster? So that's one piece, bringing it online faster. The second piece is finding land or available land where we can more clearly dictate the terms. So in my neighborhood in Edge Hill, we did this with a couple of different developments with land that was owned by the city. And rejecting this, I heard it and I kept hearing it and thinking, like, is this like Ben Carson, like a third, a third, a third, 888? Like people would just kind of like throw out these numbers. But we actually pushed back and said, if the land that the city owns is its most valuable asset, then why are you accepting that it has to be a third, a third, a third? Why can't we accept 60-40
right.
affordable and low income and just get rid of the market rate? The market rate aspect of it, I think for the most part, the market is taken care of, right? We've
right.
seen that.
Sure.
So we do have land across the city that's owned by the city. We do also have a big chunk of land that's just come back under control of the city in the East Bank.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
And so I think it is a combination of what economic development tools or incentives have we used to incentivize jobs and to start to think about how could we reuse some of those around housing? How could we use the assets that we have? And then also how could we clean up the code that maybe only on the margin some of the market rate housing will be available faster or mm-hmm. maybe some of it would come down some because it's 6 months is 6 months more where I'm carrying a construction loan
right?
and I'm not actually cash flowing those units. Sure. And so once they come online, they've got a bigger, a bigger dollar figure to pay off.
Right, right.
So boring, but maybe.
Well, it is boring, but it's not. But something that occurs to me as you're thinking about that, I mean, you talk about council structure is probably going to change. Of course, it's still in the courts, and
sure.
we'll see where that all ends up. But one of the things that I've wondered about is, as we're changing the council, is it not also time to look at the charter as a whole? Because mm-hmm. right now, I mean, one of the critiques of Nashville sometimes has been that the mayor's office has probably more power than mm-hmm. in some other places.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's all based on that 50 years ago when we were putting everything together and Beverly Briley and all of those kinds of things. But is if we're going to have to rework everything anyway, is it time to kind of say, okay, that history is gone, mm-hmm. and it's time for us to move to look at what things need to look like for us now.
Mm-hmm. Or to look at that history to say, let us allow that to inspire us in that same moment of change to figure out how things are going to work together. We'd maybe have another moment of change here. I think about, yes, the mayor has a lot of strength in the position mm-hmm. here in Nashville vis-a-vis the council, but also we have a situation that, like as I've been meeting with the police, the Fraternal Order of Police, mm-hmm. or the firefighters, and reading through and sort of getting my arms around what are the issues, what are their questions, one thing that strikes me is right now in our charter, the employee benefit board mm-hmm. and the employee service commission, these separate, one sets pay and one sets benefits, and they're not required to talk to each other.
Gotcha.
And the mayor has to come in and say, well, here's the budget. And then they all operate under their own separate boards. Mm-hmm. And it's really fascinating, right? Because for everyone who says, I'm going to come in and run this thing as a business, it's probably more akin to running your church, right?
Right.
You have everybody's different needs. You're not actually ever going to make anyone completely happy, mm-hmm. right? But even I agree with you. I think there are a lot of places that we could use this moment to say, how could we realize, you know, if our employee benefit board and our, you know, if our pay and our benefits are not even talking to each other and they're totally separate boards, that's a little bit crazy making if you're trying to write a budget, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I would push on those. I do push on folks that talk about running government as a business, mm-hmm. only in the sense that government's not a business. It's different.
Yeah, it is.
It is qualitatively different than mm-hmm. running a business. And so pretty much if you're going to come in trying to do that, you're going to be really frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then I would say, though, that the difference is that when you can do something in government, like take, for example, the Tennessee Promise, mm-hmm. that took a very long time to make that program happen, to mm-hmm. make Tennessee the first state in the country to have free community college for every resident. But once it was there, it's probably never going away.
Oh, no.
So,
that's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's so exactly right. There's something good about the fact that like every goofy idea that some elected person has never can actually happen because of, you know, the slow interplay of all these different government units. But then there's also the opportunity when there is something, you know, really good that you can have it. But yeah, it is incredibly frustrating. Right. Yeah.
You mentioned the East Bank a minute ago. Mm-hmm. As you know, there's a very large building that's about to be built there.
Yeah.
And again, that was in that Vanderbilt study. There mm-hmm. was a lot of folks that were uncomfortable with that. Your thought, I mean, I know luckily you didn't have to vote on it or argue for it, but what are your thoughts on the whole stadium deal and where we are with that?
Yeah. So what I've said pretty consistently is what I liked was our getting, you know, 80 or 100 acres back under city control after a lot of decades of giving really prime real estate away. Mm-hmm. Or sending it out the back door in a really undervalued way for the taxpayer. So I do believe that the mayor acted as a strong fiduciary of the city in terms of sort of saying bring that back. I think it is hard for the city to swallow the idea of to your point of mm-hmm. a giant new stadium coming downtown. But at this point, 2/3 of the city council voted for it. I see governing as being passed a baton.
Right.
And I'm going to run the lap I'm going to run.
Sure.
But, you know, 2/3 of the people said, let's do that. I remember with Governor Haslam's administration, there were some programs that we inherited from the prior administration that when I would be called up to the, you know, fiscal review committee, I would think, oh, please, I would channel Ollie North, kind of like, just answer the question. Do not tell them what you really think about this program. So I think that the next mayor, one of the biggest places that that we will need increased help is trying to get TDOT to come over to help fund a big part of the infrastructure for the transit and the traffic issue on that side of the county, to be able to straighten some roads mm-hmm. out, bring some people off of that interchange of 24 and 65 that we know is just a mess. That people are even using for in-town trips. So I guess I will say I will do my best to make the most of that as it comes. But I'm not sure I would have spent the last year of my administration negotiating a deal with the Titans.
Yeah, it's you know, what I tend to hear from the hinterlands is and particularly for folks outside, what I like to say is outside of Briley Parkway. We don't have a beltway, but it's close to what we have, is that sense that so much of the energy has been spent going back to many mayors. It's mm-hmm. not just the last one, but has been spent on downtown development, downtown focus, mm-hmm. without as much coming out this direction, you know, say here in Madison or other areas. Well, I was in Antioch before I came here. So, how do you begin to sort of build the trust with, you know, most of the folks that live in Nashville live outside of that mm-hmm. downtown core?
Yeah.
How do you sort of rebuild the trust there to say, hey, you're going to benefit as well? Because I think sometimes that hasn't always been clear.
Yeah. Well, I think you rebuild trust by solving the problems that you can solve, mm-hmm. and you pick off the next one, and you pick off the next one, right? So I don't think anybody wants to believe anyone by what they say. Mm-hmm. They want to say, all right, if we've got a traffic interchange problem here, and we've said it's a problem, we can fix that. And then you'd say that's an opportunity to build trust, right? So I don't. That's not.
They're not sexy, but they really do work, right?
I do hope they're able to fix it, though, because I think about Trinity Lane and how that has been a problem How long have I lived here? About 50 years.
It's never gotten fixed. No, my son, who is the reason I converted to Catholicism was my son, and he, I grew up Episcopalian, and he became, he just became very taken at his school and wanted to convert. And I was great. He goes to a Catholic school, and he is so funny. Every time we drive by Trinity Lane, mm-hmm. he says, "This is where I have to say the prayers, all these different prayers, say the rosary," because there's always a wreck there.
Always.
There is always a wreck there.
It goes back to the driver's ed question. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's wherever there's a merge in Nashville, there's a wreck. So Fessers Lane, Trinity Lane, every day, and then 2440. So we have one there every day.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
We can count on them. It's dependable.
But something about the name Trinity Lane, just as being this site for prayers and wrecks, it's not good.
It's a very Bible Belt thing to have, Trinity Lane. It's a thing.
Very, very.
And it is where we need the most prayers, corner of Trinity Lane and what is it, Brick Church Pike?
It's an interesting place.
Wow.
If you've never been there, you need to go.
Oh, my gosh.
So
that's where the Skyway Studios are.
Well,
they're
on Dickerson Road, so they're over. So Trinity Lane and Brick Church Pike is one of those five places in Nashville where 95% of the crime happen.
Yeah,
right.
So it is. Yeah. There is a capital crime there once a month.
Well, that's a good segue about
crime. And cops. We don't have any.
We don't have any. So I know that you've talked about trying to increase the number of police, things like that. Also knowing that there are communities in our city that have not had good relationships with the police, what do you bring to the table in terms of trying to deal with the issues of crime and helping Nashville to feel like a safe place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a couple of things that I've talked about are, one, in the idea of recruiting talent here, talented officers. Obviously, we want to be a police force that the best officers want to come to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's two things. One, it's pay and benefits. Those I think have been heading in the right direction the last couple of years. I believe in this mayor's current budget, we will make our officers the best paid, the same way that we have made the teachers the best paid. So I believe we're heading in the right direction there. And then I think the other area is around just the attitude towards the service, the public service aspect of policing. I've never worn the uniform, but my husband did for 20 years in the United States Army. And I in a pretty front row way, understand that, you know, as you do here in your church, things are typically not all black and white. They're typically, most of the world operates in the gray.
Right.
And starting with the recognition that our police are going through a tremendous amount of training. They are confronted with a tremendous amount of stress. And we also are asking them to solve many societal problems where we failed.
Right.
We're putting them on the front line in the way that maybe the police of, 20 or 30 years ago did not. So I don't think that's a silver bullet, but it's saying good pay and an attitude saying we want you here and we want to make this the best urban police force in the country. In terms of the question about policing, we have had, and I think our city has had to learn from studies like Driving While Black, studies around policing in certain communities. But I also look at, and one thing I've talked about and written about is this idea of resetting from a criminal justice system to a victim's justice system. And you can look at that and say, okay, this is this trope of being tough on crime. But actually, when you look within the Tennessee Voices of Victims, who's helped me quite a bit in that, and then also speaking with victims, is a lot of our criminals are also victims, right? And working through some of that aspect of victim education and support. I don't know if that's an answer, but I think ultimately one thing we have to do is stop pretending that we do not have a crime problem in the city. I think that there is a sense of everyone saying, it's Nashville, everything's fine, right? The same way we frequently do with our schools.
Right.
Oh, nothing's, it's all fine. You know, if you look at the, you know, FBI crime data, two-thirds of our crimes that are reported are never cleared. And sure. So what does that do? That makes victims feel like, what's the point of me even reporting it? Mm-hmm. And we see that, right? And then it makes criminals kind of say, you know, it's probably a two-thirds chance I can do this and no one's ever going to care.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen, right?
Right.
But the victim cares. And then these numbers from the end of 2022 that actually show our number of victims in Nashville, this is from FBI crime data, is at 8,500, which is higher than Chicago and higher than Las Vegas on the number of victims created in that community. Mm-hmm. So that is worrisome to me.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's fair that it's worrisome. I think it's also... we have a weird leadership problem in Nashville policing, and we have for a long time. Mm-hmm. Now we got a new police chief a while back, and one of the things you notice when you drive through Nashville, mm-hmm. there are a handful of things. People from out of town comment on it, too, and it's really interesting that the police are, because of the driving while black problem, I think police then abdicated completely from traffic.
They did. Yeah. Right? They've actually been effectively instructed to like not do traffic stops.
Just don't do traffic, right?
Which is not insanity, the right result.
And yeah, then we have this street racing problem on the interstate, mm-hmm. which rolls over and yep. then becomes road rage, and that becomes yep. really bad. That's for sure. And then when you go downtown
yep.
on Friday night, you'll see, and I say this to everybody that comes to visit us here,
yep.
you'll see like 80 cruisers parked, and it's the show of force thing for Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 80 cruisers on Broadway, and maybe, I don't know the number, my gut would be over 100 police officers in that five-block area, and then lots of private security that are mm-hmm. also on the payroll in that five-block area, and none of them do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They literally turn mm-hmm. away mm-hmm. from the pedestrians that are crossing the street. They don't. They got no whistle. They got no hand up. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And to go down there with a video camera
yeah.
on a Friday and Saturday night and walk around and watch, that's a leadership problem, right? If yeah. nobody's doing anything, mm-hmm. like the worst thing that you can, you know, with the old trope about to somebody from the Department of Water or the power company or something like that leaning on a shovel,
mm-hmm.
when you see that in the police department, that really hurts
yeah.
Support for the yeah. police department in a city.
Yeah, no, and I asked Sheriff Hall, because I always take it as like, all right, is there a, you know, bottleneck somewhere? Is there a problem somewhere? Is there a reason, right, that we're seeing this happen? And, you know, and I just said, well, how many... do we have enough space in the jails? Is that like the problem? Is that why we're not arresting anyone for right. what you're saying,
sure.
right? Or taking anyone? No, we got plenty of space. We used to have about 100 arrests a day, you know, bookings a day in the jail, and now we have maybe 60,
right?
Right. And I do think, though, you know, the former police chief, I believe that the sort of the straw on his resignation was mask compliance with a person experiencing homelessness,
right.
I think. And so if I'm on the regular police force and I watch that being the way that your career has ended, then maybe I am standing there watching people in the streets doing things that we would agree they should be taken in for downtown. And I don't know.
If they would whistle and hold their hand up, I'd be impressed. If they, okay. You know what I mean? If they arrest yeah. people for doing crime, 100% support that. But literally turning around and engaging when you're making double time on a weekend night, which everybody knows they're making double time on a weekend night,
mm-hmm.
and literally just directing traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of the most dense places in the United States yeah. now on Friday and Saturday night in yeah. downtown Nashville. And
yeah.
this is it's not a hard thing to do,
yeah.
but you do have to want to do your job, and somebody yeah. has to tell you to. Because that means yeah. the sergeant's not mad at you if you don't.
Yeah. So two things. I was on a radio show last week, and the lady wasn't aware that we now have, and I'm sure you guys are, but I will just say this in case listeners aren't, that we now recently have created the position of a night mayor.
Right.
Yeah.
The worst name of any position ever in government
and
history.
But isn't that out of the Dutch, like Nachtmayr yes. or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. We yeah. were stationed in Brussels for a while, so bad
sure.
bad Dutch. And the other thing that has come about in the last 6 months downtown is that there is now a separate downtown police force, right, that
Correct.
Is funded through the additional 4% property tax and 22% higher sales tax on downtown, with arrest provisions that are Tennessee Highway Patrol and I think Millersville. My understanding is right now they actually can't be Metro Police because of some insurance thing. But I listening to Henry Hicks at
There's
the National.
There's a lot of Metro Police down there.
Yeah.
But there have been some issues with that because it turns out the Millersville police weren't really police.
They were fake police. And they were also wearing police on their vest, which is a violation of Tennessee state law. That's impersonating a police officer. So you see these guys that are literally in full tactical gear, police across their front and their back, with at least one, if not two, weapons and then tasers and all that kind of stuff. And it turns out they're not police officers at all.
Yeah.
They're private security, which is a felony in Tennessee.
And I don't know enough, but I was at a Leadership Nashville thing. Henry Hicks, who runs the National Museum of African American Music, he was commenting a couple weeks ago. He said, look, I'm no longer seeing the drug deals happen in front of my museum. So I don't know what it is, but I guess there's a sense that some kind of order is coming. I don't know.
I think there is. I think that the sheer numbers, I mean, you've got 150 or however many police officers are in a 5-block area, but they're only in that 5-block area, by the way. So, and of course that is going to leak out. I think it probably does help crime. The question is,
what does it how do to many, the rest of the county?
Right. How many people in Old Hickory are having their cars rifled through? While Steve Smith is being protected by a private army, right? And this is when people start feeling like life is out of balance in my city, right? I'm not getting value, right? And back to the value question, which is so important for mayors.
And again, you can flip that. You know, the reason that the people of Nashville voted for a community oversight board was the feeling that there was an abuse, there were abuses going on in the police department that needed to be looked at, and it wasn't happening internally by the existing systems. Now, of course, the state has now changed that whole thing and kind of thrown out the system that thrown that out, which of course is in the face of the voters determining this is what we need to have in place. And so I'm going to use this as a way to kind of shift into this issue about the relationship with the state, because I'm probably going to push on you just a little bit, you know, because you talked about some center right candidates, the Beth Harwells and those kind of folks, Dickerson, and all folks I know and like, but they couldn't get elected today. But in our current legislature, I mean, our current legislature seems to be much more radical than they were when you were working for the Haslam administration. How is it that we're going to be able to work through this? And I know folks will say, well, we're going to build relationships, and I know people down there. But there's a whole different mindset of folks there. How do you propose to begin to bridge that and make that conversation happen?
There was so much there. My brain was going in about 19 different directions. Yeah. I would say one, your question on the Community Oversight Board and the new legislation to reset that to an advisory board more akin to what is in Knoxville, but also marrying together your observations about people not looking the other way, officers looking the other way, because potentially how that was going to be received by that oversight board, right? Any action was going to be brought up. And so maybe somewhere there was some unintended consequences. The voters of Nashville clearly wanted to say, we want oversight. But somewhere in the way that was playing out. And my understanding from folks on the Community Oversight Board is that one of the biggest challenges is the length of time, that there could be years lapsing between an infraction and then when it's heard. And it's somewhere something wasn't working. Now, is the blunt instrument of coming down and saying, we're going to reset this for you appropriate? Probably not, but I think that the law enforcement, I mean, somewhere in there, there's a space of some type of advisory board that we see working in other cities and then how this was playing out. I don't know if that was stopping people from arresting or people to jail.
I would say this, if it was, we're back to the leadership problem, right? Yep. Because you know how many Nashville police officers have been arrested and removed in the last 5 years or since the oversight board started. And it's like one.
Yeah, I was going to say less than five.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that's happening. And if it's not happening,
then leadership needs to say to these people that are drawing a salary, which I think should be better, that you got to do your job. Sometimes that requires taking
and
a chance.
We fully, you know, it's the covenant thing. Our police stepped up. I mean, they did a great job. The best we've ever seen.
Yeah.
But those are, you know, that was kind of the one event. And then there are these other situations. Mm-hmm. And so the need for accountability, I think that's where it really comes down to is how do you find accountability in a place where it didn't feel like it was
So two examples there. One we just talked about is this creation potentially somewhat from the downtown business owners of, hey, we need our own police, going to the state to create a way to make that happen, right?
But I mean, that's wacko.
Okay, let me tell you another wacko thing.
That's a crazy idea.
What about when our schools, when every other school district in the area, private schools, parochial schools, independent schools, were all reopened in the fall of 2022, or excuse me, fall of 2020. I'm losing time and COVID years.
We are.
But Metro Nashville was not reopening, right? And we watched other large school systems, like Las Vegas, where we almost felt we followed a very similar trajectory. We watched the mental health implications of keeping kids at home and not on Zoom. We watched child suicide rates. And our parents here had to go and petition the state to create a state law to force us to open, right? So sometimes our own city's dysfunction has caused this very uncomfortable interplay.
Right.
I don't think that, I don't disagree with you. I think that any of us can, that as we look backwards on a pandemic, should we come across one again, we'll know to do things differently, right? But we can't do that. We can't fix 2020 and 2023.
Yeah.
And certainly, there's no question that we need to refocus some resources on our kids and helping them get caught up and helping them with mental health. I think we've seen all that. And sure, some mistakes were made and some were horrible, right? Yeah. They're gone.
Yeah.
So that happened already. Now we have to go to the next step. And I don't think it's the same as the state coming in and overturning the majority will of the voters. You know, when schools were closed, that was not because of the majority will of the voters. That was because of a small group of people running the schools, right? When it comes to the community oversight board, that was, you know, that was an elected by majority of Nashvillians thing that you overturned. Those are different things. One of them is functional and was a mistake. One of them is, you know, a fully, democratically elected choice by the citizens that are paying the bills. And I think when the state comes in and overturns something that we've voted on already, you better have a very strong argument. And they don't. They don't have – I don't see any argument, honestly. I mean, I think that you can say it's not working perfectly. It needs tweaked. That's fine. So tweak it.
But the blunt instrument of totally resetting it.
And then it creates a situation where the citizens of Nashville are now anti-state of Tennessee. And this is a common feeling, right? The citizens of Nashville have become, out of necessity, sort of – antagonistic with the state they live in. We already have, both of us have friends that have moved because of the state legislature, not because of the city, but they've left Nashville because, and they therefore the state. That's not a healthy environment.
So I guess it gets back to this idea of how do you start to build trust and solve problems,
right?
So this state budget now makes Tennessee the first state in the country to provide diapers for babies on 10 care, right? That is 25,000 families in Davidson County,
right?
So how do we start to keep thinking about some of these issues like homelessness or people experiencing, you know, challenges, financial challenges? How do we start to say, these are not issues that stop at the county line. Our mental health cooperative downtown is able to make the numbers work because they bill on two billing codes, a social services interaction and a mental health interaction that's paid for through 10 care, right? If we can step back and say, what public programs like WIC and SNAP are not paying for diapers, how do we then figure out what those dollars are? And that they ran the numbers and basically said, we're spending more on UTI infections and diaper rashes for babies, which is terrible.
Right.
And nobody else is solving that. Can we solve it? Right. And so I guess I start to think, we are advocating on behalf of 1 in 10 Nashvillians through a state budget that has $55 billion, right? And we have maybe three and change at the metro level. So how can we start to sort of pick pieces apart? Operation Stand Down is around the corner from me. Now, where I live and right off Music Row, I'm in the 7th Congressional District, right? That is the reality of the world that I'm living in. Well, so is Operation Stand Down. That's now a 38-county region. Mm-hmm. And so actually kind of saying, hey, Congressman Green, you're a veteran too. This is not just about veterans in Nashville. This is about veterans and in the entire region. What can we do to support that? And where? How can we help to bring some of those dollars there? I guess that's sort of how I think of it is, what is the problem? And then how can I get some other people that have a similar challenge? On legislation, broadly speaking, I will say Nashville, and one of our challenges, and people talk about this a lot, is we're not able to charge impact fees, whereas our neighbors at Williamson County, Mayor Anderson is. He has a beautiful name for it. I went down and visited with him a couple months ago. I think it's called like school improvement fees. It's such a good, happy fee for somebody to pay. But we are on, like Rutherford County and Murray County, we are on the wrong side of what was called the County Powers Act in 2006. And actually, I think with some humility, to start to say, Bradley County Mayor, Rutherford County Mayor, Murray County Mayor, you all kind of have the same problem. You're on the wrong side of this law. Probably the only way we're going to get that shifted is for you to quarterback it, and we'll bring our voters in when we're ready. And how would that help Nashville, right? Right now, some of the problem with that raise of property taxes is that we are not able to capture at the point of growth those additional dollars that we would all argue are needed for the load on our infrastructure, what people are commonly call impact fees. Mm-hmm. Williamson County is able to capture those because they had that in place before this 2006 law. And I know those are the kind of things that I think about. It's like, because then we wouldn't have to raise the taxes on all citizens to cover this sort of new growth. And right now we're precluded at the state level from doing that.
Sure.
So again, is that coming forward? I mean, frequently, so I did work years ago with Chairman Sapicki, and there's a note on my website about this. When the budget, the COVID budget, pre-COVID 2020 governor's budget included $250 million, $250 million for children's mental health. And then that was one of the first things taken out when they had to redo the budget. So when they came back to a special session to talk about all things education, but none of them were kids' mental health, I did kind of blow up a lot of people. And in the next budget, it was back in there. But for somebody like Chairman Sapicki, who is he's from Murray County. He's very, you know, one of our further right legislators, mm-hmm. one of those ones to say, how do you learn how to work together?
Right.
For him, he was in two different professional sports teams. He and I worked on an op-ed that he published. And he has become one of the greatest champions of mental health work. I'm seeing him next week. He's got a $1.4 billion plan to create residential mental health treatments in all of the 33 state senates. We would get three here in Davidson County, which you can see the need right. for,
Absolutely.
Beds and care. But for someone like Chairman Sapicki, when we talk about mental health as a skill mm-hmm. that we can learn in the same way a muscle that can be taught and exercised, for him, I think sometimes it's helping bring a problem and to start to break it down in a way that we can be for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can talk about removing the bust in the same way if you want
sure.
to talk about that. I mean,
no.
Okay.
We're fine.
Yeah. Okay.
We're good.
Yeah.
We're really kind of at the end of our time.
We
so,
are.
So what
like,
we
could do this for another hour.
One of the things we always do is what do you want to say that you haven't said?
Well, I would just say that I'm hopeful and optimistic. I do know that we have a lot of challenges right now in Nashville, but I believe that the same way when we amassed this grassroots army for the petition I started for the citizens of Fort Negley, that we actually, the people outside in the county that feel like they don't have any power over City Hall or downtown, mm-hmm. actually, when we kind of stand up and speak up, I think we can send a message that we've got to move the city in a new direction, and I think my candidacy does that. So visit aliceroley.com, come to one of our events, check us out.
All right, I got one.
You have yours.
I got my final question that I ask everyone. And so then, what is one thing in Nashville that
makes you terribly sad, and one thing in Nashville that brings you great joy. These can be restaurants all the way to tragedies, but anything that just, what brings you joy and what brings you sadness.
Yeah. Well, on the joy, and I've talked about this too, I think that Nashville is a place that can defy the odds, right? So we look at everything around granting the women the right to vote, to Mother Catherine Drexel coming here and in spite of the neighbors trying to stop her, showing the world that we could educate Black girls when our city believed that we could not. So I think there are so many people like that in our history that consistently inspire me. What makes me sad about Nashville? Gosh, I look at so many half fulls. I guess that... I mean, it makes me sad, some of the work that you do here, that we have people experiencing homelessness or drug addiction that appear that we're not helping them.
Sure.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite restaurant? Kind of put you on the spot here.
Come on now. We always touch on a restaurant because our food is awesome here.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
If somebody else was buying, where would you go tonight?
Yeah, well, I'll go with Il Forno, which is new, relatively new. The Pizziola, who used to be at Bella Napoli, that's down the street from us, went and opened his own restaurant over in Wedgwood, Houston. And so I would highly recommend that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're so glad you joined us, and we look forward to seeing how things are going to play out in the next few weeks.
It's going to be a wild couple of months. Thanks for being
here. Yes,
it will.
Thanks.
So, that was another great interview.
Wow.
And again, I was just impressed with her sense of knowledge, what she knows about the city, what she brings to the table. And she is not... I would say that she certainly leans right of center, but she is not consistent with some of the folks we have in the legislature right now who are
she's
very
not.
Right wing.
She's super capable of sitting down with them and working with them, it seems. She has some history there, but I think that she definitely doesn't. She feels much more Nashvilleian.
Well, you know, I mean, I always joke about, because of my background, I know how to speak Baptist.
Sure.
And I use that when I need to. She kind of has the same thing. She knows how to speak Republican and work in those circles.
Absolutely.
And there is something to be said for that in our current state.
She has a good message about how to deal with the legislature. And I think that's an important thing to think about.
Exactly.
So a lot to hear here. I think that you'd be, I don't know, it seems to me like you'd have to be pretty biased to walk away from that and not think that she is a viable contender.
I think that's exactly
for the
right.
seat. And, you know, it's just, this has really turned into a great series, talking to people. I'm talking to people all the time, either on social media or back and forth personally about these interviews and how important they are. And I think they're becoming more important as each day goes by. There have been too many forums.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the issues is that you've got these forums, but you've got 8 or 10 or 15 people on the stage. So each one of them gets about 5 minutes a time.
Yeah, right. They're getting, and every one of these forums has been specific to an issue.
Right.
And so if you want to know how somebody feels about the overall sense,
right,
it's really tough in these things. It's, you're talking about people like they have a debate that's only about, they had one that was about something super specific the other day.
Yeah. I know they've had several housing ones. Housing ones.
They do that a bunch. There's a transportation one
right.
where they talked about bikes and sidewalks and all that stuff.
So, yeah, I hope these conversations are helpful to give you a better sense. And I also think from the candidate standpoint, the feedback we've gotten is, you know, they have the ability to just kind of talk.
Yeah, they can talk about what they want to talk about.
And we let them talk about what they want to talk about. Not in terms of platitudes. I think they've been pretty honest and straight with us.
Yeah, you can tell when somebody kicks into politician mode.
Yes.
You can feel it. We've had a couple of those moments where people kicked into talking points. But that's their job also. They got to do that part of the job too.
Exactly. Well, as we're talking about politicians, we do have some sad news, which is that the death of Representative Bill Beck, who represented the Madison and Salem Town, Germantown,
all the way up to Old Hickory and part of Donelson.
Yeah, Bill was as a friend and was a great representative for this part of the town. He was well loved in Madison and very, very, very active out in this community. And so
he was also younger than us, and he dropped dead of a heart attack.
Yeah, that
this is really
we were trying
not cool.
to ignore that. Yeah. Exactly. But we do wish Bill's family the best. I know this was very sudden, and it's been a big loss for a lot of people. And so, but Bill, we honor you. We trust that God's with you and that you're with God, and that everything in the next life will be great, and that you
he
will
won't
be
have the Tennessee
in a Democratic,
legislature,
yeah,
right,
a Democratic controlled right. legislature. So anyway, Bill, we do honor you.
Yeah, that's
what
a
else
loss.
Is going on? Anything?
There's really been a lot going on. There's they have this thing in Nashville mm-hmm. where once a year they have the worst singers of anti-rap music sing for 4 days at Nissan Stadium. And they're having
Are you talking about the CMA Fest?
Oh, yeah. That's what they call it, the CMA Fest.
The CMA Fest.
Mm-hmm. And so the city is completely packed with humanity.
And yeah, that's
it's shocking.
I've got to go down there today and on Saturday, and not it's to the fest.
Good.
You know, I went to the fest about, I don't know, it's probably been about 10 years ago now. And
it was a different fest.
It was a different fest. But it had already become CMA Fest. Yeah. It wasn't Fan Fest. It
wasn't fanfare.
But it was fun in its own certain charming
Listen,
way.
I'm still open to the invitation to go to the Skybox for Sony. And dude, that's the last time I was invited mm-hmm. was to go to the Skybox at Nissan Stadium for yeah. Sony, where it's catered and you get lots of stuff. Totally down with that.
Did I tell you that my younger daughter got industry passes to Bonnaroo?
No, but that's good. She'll have some fun there because my son will have a bus backstage where they're going to have catering and a VIP event for the backstage folks.
I will have to let her know.
At Bonnaroo, yeah.
Yeah, so, she'll probably want to hang out
yeah,
with him.
There'll be some very, very interesting humanity hanging around that bunch.
I'm sure. Which son?
No.
Josh?
No. Noah. Yeah, no, Exile Entertainment is doing a thing backstage.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
they've already booked the whole thing.
That's great.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
I just told her that if she meets Dave Grohl, she has to bring him home for dinner.
Yeah, Dave'd be fun to hang out with. He'd be a fun.
Dave would be
a fun,
fun
barbecue.
Hang. Yeah, I think we need to get him to come do a barbecue to help homeless people in Nashville. Don't you think?
Yeah, he might do that.
He might. He's done
it. Just
be done
one
it
of those.
LA,
yeah,
know?
It'd be one of those things that you just have to be in the right mood when you ask him.
Exactly.
So my son did get paparazzi yesterday because he's in L.A. with Noah. He's yeah. in L.A. with his big client who's a TV star. And so they walked out of a restaurant. And they both had a plan to make a funny face if they mm-hmm. got paparazzi. And
right.
so they made these goofy faces for yeah. TMZ yesterday. And that was kind of funny.
Well, that's cool.
I ate someplace new the other day that I wanted to make sure that I mentioned. And it may end up that it's on the next episode because I may not be able to remember it.
I've got one. And it's literally within walking distance from here in
Madison. This is good.
It's called Nuevo Jerusalem. And it is the New Jerusalem.
Well, yeah.
But it is a Salvadoran place.
Nice.
And
they have pupusas?
They have pupusas.
I love pupusas.
I know. I really want pupusas. I went there for breakfast. They do breakfast. And I had scrambled eggs and chorizo kind of mixed
sure.
together.
Yeah, yeah.
Black beans that you dip the pupusa tortillas in. Fried plantains, avocado, and cheese.
This is a very difficult conversation for me to have right now.
Yeah, I understand.
I haven't eaten yet.
It was a great breakfast. Well, we'll have to go there.
Well, my wife got up and made food, but I wasn't able. So it's called
Nuevo Jerusalem.
Jerusalem.
It's in the little shopping center right next to where Giro King is, down the street here on the left.
Got it.
Okay. Well, and that's in Madison, Tennessee.
Right
for
in
all
Madison.
Of the, all of y'all out there who listen to this.
I went someplace super fancy, and I can't remember which one I went to. I've been on a kind of a fancy restaurant run.
By the way, I'm just going to say to our listeners, all five or six of you, that if you really want to improve the quality of this show,
yeah.
we need to buy some new microphones.
Yeah,
so,
right. So you
just send
just
money to
donate
Brian.
Donate money. Yeah, just
send money to Brian. He'll tell you how to do that somehow.
Yeah, it's
but
easy to do.
It's easy to do. Well, anyway, thank you, Alice, for being on the show. Thank you, Brian, for coming over for us to be able to record this.
Mad Dash to finish it up.
And we will see who we can get next. So
all right.
Everybody take care.